Hello, and welcome back to Texas Tech Health Check from Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. I'm your host, Melissa Whitfield. We want you to get healthy and stay healthy with help from evidence-based advice from our physicians, healthcare providers, and researchers. Asthma is a disease which affects 6 million children in the U.S., according to the Centers for Disease Control and Prevention. What can you do if your child has asthma, and how can you encourage them to be active without triggering an asthma attack? Our guest for this episode, Dr. Adobe Canoe, is a pediatric pulmonologist for Texas Tech Physicians. She explains to us what is asthma, what causes it, what triggers attacks, what are treatments, and what can parents and caregivers do to keep their kiddos safe. Welcome back to our podcast.
Thank you very much. Thank you very much for having me again.
Can you tell us a little bit about yourself, your expertise, and what you do here at the Health Sciences Center?
Yes, my name is Dr. Adobe Canoe. I'm an associate professor at Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center. I'm in the Department of Pediatrics, and I do pediatric pulmonology. So I take care of children with various types of lung diseases, problems of breathing. We do have a nationally recognized accredited cystic fibrosis care center. And so I take care of children throughout West Texas and Eastern New Mexico.
Well, we're glad to have you back.
Thank you. Thank you very much.
Today you're here to talk to us about asthma. So can you tell us what is asthma and what are the causes?
Yes. So asthma actually is a fairly common disease. Asthma is one of the most common chronic illnesses in childhood. 1 to 10 to 1 in 13 children have asthma. So it's very common. There are over 300 million people worldwide that have asthma. This includes data on children and adults. So what is asthma? Asthma is airway inflammation, and that inflammation can be triggered by a number of things: viruses, allergies, irritants, tobacco smoke. And this inflammation triggers the muscle around the airway to become tight, or what we call bronchospasm. So imagine you have a pipe that is, you know, conducting water through it. And imagine inside that pipe, you have sediment, you know, you have mud, you have sticky stuff inside it. And so that reduces the room inside the pipe to conduct water, similar to the way that inflammation inside the airway would affect the ability of the airway to move oxygen in the lungs. And so that would compromise that. And then also imagine you have a string around the pipe and you tie the string around that pipe. So that's like the muscle around the airway getting tight. And so that, of course, reduces the room that the pipe has to move water. So those two things, inflammation and tightness of the muscle around the airway, impair the ability of the airway to bring oxygen into the lungs. And so that's really a very simple explanation of what asthma is.
How is it diagnosed and what are the symptoms?
So typically when one has asthma, a lot of people think you have to be clutching your chest and going, you know, but actually some of the symptoms can include chronic cough. So an individual can have this lagging cough that is ongoing for more than 2 weeks. The cough is typically dry. That is, it doesn't sound like there's a gurgle or mucus behind it. That's fairly typical. And then the person may have something called wheezing, which is this high-pitched sound that you can hear when you put the stethoscope on the patient's chest to listen to them. They will have difficulty breathing. They'll also have chest pain or tightness. They'll feel like something squeezing their chest. And things that'll typically trigger that include viruses, allergies, irritants, especially tobacco smoke, exercise. It's typically worse at night. And sometimes people can have weather-related symptoms. So if you have barometric pressure change, where it gets very cold, that person can experience those symptoms. And how do you diagnose that? Well, It's a question of asking the patient about these symptoms, what makes those symptoms worse, which I described, and most importantly, what makes it better. So there's an agent called albuterol, and that relaxes the muscle around the airway. And typically when you give a patient with asthma albuterol, within 10 to 30 minutes, their symptoms or what they had, whether it's the coughing, the tightness, the difficulty breathing, the wheezing, gets better. So that's what we call a clinical diagnosis. A more objective test one can do is you can do a lung function test where you measure exhaled volumes and air flows at baseline, give the person albuterol, and then about 10 to 15 minutes, you measure that again. And all people with asthma, well, most people with asthma, have this improvement of that lung function after you give them albuterol. So there's a clinical diagnosis, and then there's a more objective diagnosis. And typically, you'll ask about other symptoms like, does it run in the family because it's genetic? Do you have allergies? Do you have a skin rash that's caused by allergies? Because we know that asthma is caused by genetic factors in combination with environmental exposures.
Is there anything that patients can do to treat it or manage it on a daily basis, or is this something when it's just triggered?
That's a really good question. So in asthma, and this is based on the National Institute of Health expert panel report, so they publish guidelines on treatment of asthma. And it really depends on the severity of asthma. So there are four different levels of severity. You have intermittent asthma, and then you have mild, moderate, or severe persistent asthma. And for patients that are intermittent, and these are patients, their asthma doesn't bother them more than 2 days a week. They don't have two or more nights of problems. They can just use their albuterol as needed to help relax the muscle around the airway, open up that airway, and relieve their symptoms. Once you become persistent, so that is you have symptoms more than 2 days a week or two or more nights a month, then you need to go on a daily therapy which addresses the inflammation inside the airway. And so we do have a number of inhaled anti-inflammatory therapies that can be taken. We also have medicines that you can take by mouth that address inflammation. Although most of the time when you're dealing with someone that has persistent asthma, your preferred therapy is something called inhaled corticosteroids that addresses the inflammation in the airway. And then, of course, we have something newer, which are called biologics. Because we know that asthma is triggered by inflammation molecules or triggers, we know that many asthmatics can have these high levels of inflammatory markers, like allergy markers like immunoglobulin E or certain type of white blood cells called eosinophils that increase airway inflammation. And to address that, we have anti-inflammatory agents that can be injected. And these are typically for people with very severe asthma that are often steroid dependent. We also have allergy shots. We know that patients that have severe asthma, there's a high association with allergies. And so allergy shots are, the other name for it is immunotherapy. And so you address the person's allergies by triggering their immune system to look at something that they're allergic to, and they are no longer having an allergic response to that same agent, something like trees or dogs or mold. So that's kind of the broad spectrum. It's become a lot more options for treatment are now available than before.
So you touched on this, but are there varying degrees of its impact? And should children be encouraged to be less active to keep from having an asthma attack?
Yeah, so, you know, the impact on quality of life with asthma really depends upon its severity. For those that are intermittent, it typically doesn't have too much of an impact on quality of life. I think once you get into your more moderate or severe persistent, more refractory asthma, that can impact the quality of life. These individuals oftentimes are missing school. So parents have to miss work because they have to take their child to the emergency department, the doctor's office. They have to stay home with them to administer more frequent respiratory therapies and monitor them. We have children that aren't able to take part in sports because of their asthma, and that can impact their quality of life, especially if they're going to the emergency department, they're hospitalized. However, we encourage patients with asthma to have as much of a fulfilled quality of life as possible. And for children, being active is very important. In fact, if you look at the expert panel report guidelines on asthma control, exercise tolerance is one of those benchmarks of addressing control. And so one of the goals is to allow the child to tolerate exercise. And so, in fact, we don't discourage exercise. If the child does not have good exercise tolerance, we really need to step up their control therapy. We need to address that. There should not be a child that is not able to exercise or take part in sports because of their asthma. They need to go to their doctor to address their controller therapy. They need to address what issues could be making their asthma worse. So, is there someone at home that's smoking? Because that's a very bad environmental exposure. Does the child have significant allergies that could be affecting their asthma? Do they have gastric reflux? We know that gastric reflux can affect asthma. Do they have sinus issues? Sinus issues can also affect asthma. So those are some of the things. And most importantly, are they taking their medicines like they're supposed to? And are they taking them the correct way? We know that not taking your medicines like you're supposed to, taking them incorrectly, is probably the more common cause of someone's asthma not being well controlled.
What are the risks of leaving it untreated?
So the most obvious risk then would be that the child has an impaired quality of life. They miss school. They're going to the emergency department. They're in the hospital. So they have a higher risk for an asthma attack because you have a lot of airway inflammation, which causes the muscle around the airway to become tight or constrict. And so the child is missing school. They're homesick. They're in the emergency department. They're in the hospital. There is a risk of death. Sadly, there have been asthma patients that have died of asthma attack. Then long-term, what can happen is if one does not address the inflammation in the airway, what happens is there is a condition called airway remodeling. And this is where you have chronic inflammation. It's much like having a scab, a continuous scab. And if that scab is continuous, eventually the body is going to try to heal itself by laying down scar tissue or collagen. The same thing happens inside the airway. And once the airway, once there's collagen laid down in the airway doesn't rebound as much as it does. And so now you have this chronic low lung function, which may not respond to albuterol. And that can happen long term if the asthma is not addressed.
What can parents and caregivers do to keep their children safe?
I think one of the most important things is tobacco smoke. We know that there are studies where mothers smoked during pregnancy, that impacted the child's lung function. Children had lower lung function. Also, smoking around young children increases their risks of ear infections, bronchitis, wheezing, worse outcome of asthma. So I think one of the most important things is reducing, you know, if a parent smokes, address ways to quit. Find out, why do I smoke? Why am I doing tobacco smoking? What can I do to wean? Because the nicotine addiction is very difficult. What can I do to wean and quit? The other one is recognizing signs of asthma in children. So If a child has a nagging cough, a cough that's persistent, they need to bring that up. If the child is not able to keep up with other children in terms of exercising, so you compare children of similar ages and your child is not able to keep up, they're having to rest more often. That's something that needs to be brought up to the primary care practitioner. If the child is noticing that their chest is tight, they're having a lot of chest pain, that needs to be brought up to the primary care practitioner. So recognizing those symptoms of asthma, which is coughing, wheezing, difficulty breathing, chest discomfort. I think those things need to be recognized, addressed with the primary care practitioner. And it's really important that the primary care practitioner listen to the patient. I think if the caregiver feels that their concerns are not listened to, they need to tell their primary care practitioner that they feel that their concerns are not being addressed or listened to. And they may have to find another primary care practitioner. You know, many people take their car to 1, 2, 3 mechanics, you know, and yet for their own health, they're like, well, okay, I guess I'll do things as, you know, as they are, instead of, you know, if they have a feeling, you know, getting a second opinion. And then if the person is at a certain therapeutic level where their asthma is not controlled, and this is in the expert panel, then the primary care practitioner needs to think about referring them to a specialist. And that could be a pulmonologist or an allergy asthma specialist.
Is there anything else you'd like to add?
I think it's really important for parents to be aware of the symptoms of asthma. I think most importantly, I think parents, even with chronic illnesses, parents should encourage their child to exercise and lead a full, happy life, have a good quality of life. I think that's one of the goals of chronic illness treatment, is to improve the child's quality of life. And then most importantly, eliminate tobacco smoke exposure. Smoking during pregnancy can impact the child's lung function. Smoking around the child can increase their risk for ear infections, bronchitis, and worsening asthma.
Well, thank you so much for all this great information. It was great having you.
Thank you so much. Thank you so much. And to the audience members, I hope that you find this information helpful and useful.
Well, we hope to have you back.
Thank you very much. I'll be happy to come back.
Thanks for listening to Texas Tech Health Check. Make sure to subscribe or follow wherever you listen to podcasts. This information is not intended to be a substitute for professional medical advice. Always seek immediate medical advice from your physician or your healthcare provider for questions regarding your health or medical condition. Texas Tech Health Check is brought to you by Texas Tech University Health Sciences Center and produced by Tier Castillo, Susanna Cisneros, Mark Hendricks, Kay Williams, Tyler White, and me, Melissa Whitfield.